Okay, let's begin. We are on Parshas Va'era. I'd like to learn with you this afternoon the first three paragraphs, if you will, of Parshas Va'era. If you had the regular stone chumash that we're used to, you'd see how it's divided into three paragraphs. And to follow through each one of the opening sections of our Parsha is a statement of Hashem. Hashem is speaking to Moshe, different statements each time. And to take a look at the three statements, they're relatively short. The first section, the opening of the Parsha, is about eight psukim. It does elicit a response from Moshe. The second is only three psukim, which also elicits a response from Moshe. And the third statement that Hashem makes is just a command to Moshe and to Aaron, which does not elicit any particular response. So what I'd like to do is work through as best we can these conglomerate 15 or so psukim, seeing each message that Hashem delivers, the first message, the second message, and the third message, and just learn it together and derive what we can, some beautiful lessons from them as they are. Let's just set the table. Where are we in the story that we're opening up with three communications from Hashem to Moshe? So where we left off at last week Hashem introduces himself to Moshe at the burning bush. They have a week-long dialogue in which Moshe repeatedly declines his mission that he's been given by Hashem until he's finally won over, so to speak. Hashem gets angry at him and says, this is what you need to be doing. And he sends him back down to Mitzrayim. He arrives, he meets his brother Aharon, who he hasn't seen for over 60 years. At the time, Moshe is now 80. And we know that he left as a young man. The Ramban even suggests maybe at the age of 12, maybe around the age of 20. Clearly, he's been away for about 60 years. He comes back and he tells his message to the people that Hashem has sent him to redeem them and take them out of Mitzrayim and bring them to the land that was promised to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And the question that I always like to ask, did the people believe Moshe when he showed up the first time that he came with his message of redemption? And the answer is, yes, they did. The Torah is explicit. They believed him. They bowed down. They prostrated themselves. They were so excited. And as we mentioned last week, you could just imagine what was going on in the tents of all of the Jewish people that night when Moshe arrives literally out of the blue. He shows up. You haven't seen him in 60 years. And he comes with a message of redemption. Hashem has sent me. I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim. You could just imagine what was going on in all of their tents. Meanwhile, the Parsha concludes that Moshe then goes before Paro. He stands before Paro and he says, time for us to leave. And Paro doesn't follow the script. And Paro says, although Hashem said this is really what was going to happen, Paro says, no, I'm not letting them out. They're staying here. Not only am I not letting them out, at the end of the parasha, Paro says, clearly these guys are bored. They don't have enough to do that they're talking about this narishkeit of redemption. So I'm going to make it harder on them. And he takes away their straw, but he doesn't take away the quota that they need to fulfill of how many bricks. And it was bad before, it's unbearable now. It's so unbearable. The Torah describes in the last few verses of last week's parasha that the people couldn't bear. They couldn't even stand seeing Moshe. They yelled at him, why did you bother coming? Since you showed up, it's only gotten worse here. Wish you never would have come. And that in turn causes Moshe, and this is how the parasha ends, Moshe turns to Hashem and says, why did you send me? Things were bad enough for these people. Now that I've shown up, it's only gotten worse. And the last pasuk, Hashem says, now you'll see the redemption of Hashem. So we leave on a cliffhanger last week, and then our parsha opens up with, as I said, three consecutive communications from Hashem to Moshe. Let's take a look at them. I'll share the screen for those of you who do not have a chumash in front of you. Here is the first. We're going to do it relatively quickly because we want to see a bigger piece. The first message, let's just do a brief overview of what this first message is going to be. The first message is going to be, now you're going to see the redemption. Now you're going to see redemption in a way that was never seen before. You're going to see my presence in the world, Hashem says, in a way that was never seen before. And he's going to say the famous four languages of redemption. V'hitzalti, v'hotzesi, v'lakachti, v'gachti. I'm going to take you out. I'm going to save you. I'm going to bring you to the land of Israel. This is, I say, famous because the Gemara connects the reason why we drink 4 cups of wine at the Pesach Seder. So amongst the reasons that are given, the Gemara connects because of these 4 languages of redemption that the sages established that we should drink 4 cups of wine. This is going to be the message that Hashem is going to say. 2-part message. A, you're going to see me in a way that you've never seen before. And B, I'm going to give you all these different languages of redemption. It's time to go home. Let's take a look at it inside. The pasuk reads as follows. Vayidaber Elokim al Moshe. Vayomer Elav Ani Hashem. You see here right away 2 different names of Hashem. Vayidaber Elokim is the name of Hashem that usually has a connotation of justice or judgment. Elokim is a Midas Adin, speaks to Moshe, and he says, Ani Hashem. I am using here the name of Hashem, which is the name that we, of course, never pronounce. It's just the Yud and the Hey, and the Vav and the Hey, and that's how Hashem introduces him. I am Hashem. Rashi comments right away that the reason why the speaker, the name of Hashem that he uses as he speaks is the name of Din, or judgment, is because he's speaking harshly to Moshe. You questioned me at the end of last week's parasha. You said to me, why did you send me? I know what I'm doing. And therefore, he's rebuking Moshe for speaking in such a harsh language. And therefore, the name of Hashem that's used is the name of judgment. And he says, Ani Hashem. What's so special that he introduces himself to Moshe with this name of Ani Hashem? So he says, Va'eroi el Avram el Yitzchak v'Yaakov bekel Shaddai. I've appeared to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but when I appeared to them, I only did so with a different name of Hashem, the name of Kel Shaddai. Ushmi Hashem, but this name of Hashem that I just used to you right now, that I'm introducing myself to you, Lo Nodati Lahem. That was never known to them. And all the commentators stop right here and try to understand. Clearly what Hashem is expressing to Moshe is, I'm revealing myself with the name of Hashem, and I did not do that to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. To them I only used the name of Kel Shaddai, but I did not appear in this world to reveal myself, express myself with this name of Hashem. And so the commentators try to figure out, what's the difference? What did he do to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? And what is he now about to do to Moshe and the Jewish people? So I just want to share the 2 classic responses, one from Rashi and one from the Ramban, as to what they understand Hashem is saying here, that I used to appear like this, and now I'm going to appear like that. Rashi says what this is a reflection of is promises and keeping promises. Now, not to say, heaven forbid, that Hashem doesn't keep his promise, but there are times in the world before it's time for the promise to be kept. So that Hashem is saying, I appeared to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and I made promises to them. I told them I was going to send their children down to Mitzrayim, and they were going to be enslaved, but then I was going to redeem them, and I was going to give them this land. As we've seen many, many times in the past, we go over every time we learn Sefer Bereishis, how many times Hashem says to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, this land I'm going to give to you and to your children. You're going to inherit this land. I said it so many times to them, Hashem says now to Moshe. So many times, but the time hadn't come, because I was going to send their children down to Egypt, and now it's time to redeem them. So to Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov, I revealed myself with the name of Hashem that makes promises, but hadn't yet kept it. Not because I couldn't, just it wasn't time yet. But now you're going to see me in a way that not only makes promises, but that fulfills. And I shared this with this idea with my 8th grade students. So just to relate it, then I said, like, you know, your parents probably make promises all the time, as do your teachers. Like, yes, you're going to get this reward or this prize. And at a certain point, like, yeah, it's coming. But, you know, it's one thing when you make me a commitment. It's one thing when you tell me it's going to happen. And it's another when the gift arrives. When we actually get, you know, teaching the beginning of a class says, if everybody behaves, you'll get 5 extra minutes of recess. Yeah, let's see what happens. When you actually get it, when the person carries through what they committed to do, 5 minutes, I'll be off the phone in 5 minutes. I'll be with you in 5 minutes. I'll take care of it in 5 minutes. Well, we all know when 5 minutes comes and go, how many times can you say that before the listener begins to lose faith that you actually meant 5 minutes? Soon they learn that it means 5 minutes means sometime off in the future. So Hashem said, I said to Avram, Yitzchak, I was going to give their children this land. They never saw it happen. Not only did they never see it happen, but they themselves had to purchase themselves plots in this land that I had promised. Avram has to buy a burial plot for Sarah, and Yitzchak digs all these wells, and then they get filled, and he has to dig new wells. Over and over again, they themselves weren't owners of the land. So that's how Rashi understands Hashem is opening up his conversation to Moshe by saying, they never saw me in my full glory because I didn't fulfill it, but now I'm about to. You're going to see that. The Ramban takes a very different approach, that there are two names here, there are two ways of relating to the world, and that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov only saw one, and now we're going to see something new. The Ramban explains it as follows. We've addressed some of these issues in the past as well. It's a very deep concept that the Ramban addresses in many different places in different ways. We'll touch on it as best we can now, and then we'll continue forward. We'll come across this again in other times as well. Says the Ramban as follows. There is a name, the name El Shakai, or Kel Shaddai, refers to, in his language, Minatzeach Me'archot Hashamayim. I rule over or subdue the heavenly constellations. There's a concept of mazel in the world. There are 12 mazolos, 12 different constellations. Each one has a certain sphere of influence in which, if you know how to read the mazolos, so to speak, predicts is the wrong word. It reflects that which will take place. And Hashem says, I am on top of that. The Kel Shaddai, the God or the power that is Shaddad, which subdues or controls that which I put into place, which dictates or reflects that which will take place. Meaning, La Asot Imam Nisim Gidolim Shalom Nizbatel Behaminha Ga'olam. I did many miracles for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Whenever I would do a miracle for them, it was the type of miracle that does not alter the laws of nature. Meaning, let's just take simple examples, and this is what the Ramban brings as far as what happens to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Let's say there's a famine in the world, and an individual or an individual family manages to make do during the famine. They somehow find a little bit of food here, they're able to buy from here, they get a little bit of crop. So in a way you say, well, there was a famine, they weren't supposed to have anything, the whole world is suffering. They figured out a way. Was it a change of the order of nature? Was there suddenly rain only over their plots? That's not what happened. It's just they managed. So Hashem says, I manage the world, and I did this for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I saved them from famine. I saved them from war. I granted them wealth and honor. When a person becomes wealthy and their stocks do well, nobody says, that was a miracle, that changed it. No, they were in the right place in the right time. Their business did very well. Their stocks did very well. I manipulate the world within the natural order of the world for those who I choose to do so. That's the Midah, that's the name of Hashem interacting with the world, called Kel Shaddai. And the power that subdues what a mazel might have said, you should suffer here, or you should do well, and I could manipulate things that you don't do well, and that you don't suffer, whichever the case may be, for a righteous person or a wicked person, within the natural order. And the Ramban then takes the opportunity to say that Midah of Hashem is, the entire Torah is based on that concept. As he writes, Kol ha-yi'adim shebatorah bebrachos v'klolos. All the promises the Torah makes in the brachos and the klolos, blessings and curses. Torah says many times, if you'll follow in my ways, we say it in Shema every day. If you follow in my way, vayim shemo tishmo mitzvosai. What are we going to get? What does the Torah say? You'll have wonderful crops. You'll have healthy animals. You'll have peace in your land. You'll have rain. All these beautiful blessings. And if you don't follow in the precepts of the Torah says, I'll withhold the rain. The ground will become like iron. You'll have no crops. There'll be war. The Ramban says, wait a minute. You're telling me, this is what the Torah is saying, that if I put on tefillin, it's going to rain? And if I don't keep Shabbos, then it won't rain? What does this Jew, this Jewish community in Israel, doing this behavior or that behavior, what does that have to do with peace in the land? What does that have to do with whether or not there'll be crops? Whether or not the animals will be healthy? They have nothing to do with them. Putting on tefillin and keeping Shabbos don't affect the weather patterns. Says the Ramban, every single time the Torah promises us blessing and good things for following in the mitzvahs of the Torah, in effect, the Torah is saying, this idea that Hashem is saying, yes, I will manipulate the world within the natural order of the world, that it will not appear strange or miraculous, but to those who deserve blessing, I will give blessing, and to those not, they will not receive, but it won't look out of the ordinary. Ki lo tavo al ha'adam tovo bischar mitzvah o onesh aveira. Person doesn't receive blessings because of a mitzvah or a punishment because of an aveira. Rak b'maset. That is a miracle. That it should affect your cows, whether or not you don't wear shatnez. What difference does that make? Says the Ramban, Av schar kol ha-Torah ve'ansho ba'olam hazeh ha-kol nisim. All reward and punishment in the Torah is miraculous. Just nistarim. It's miraculous, concealed miracles, that one who looks at it, the casual observer, simply sees minhago shel olam, the regular way of the world. And the Ramban adds one more point along this line, and he says this is why there's a major issue which is addressed in many aspects of the Torah, which is why does the Torah only mention reward? When it ever mentions reward, it always mentions the reward in this world context, meaning in crops, in peace, in prosperity, in rain. The Torah never once says, keep Shabbos, so that you'll receive Olam Haba. In the world of truth, in the world of the souls, you'll live for eternity to always revel in the presence of Hashem. The Torah doesn't say, don't charge another Jew interest so that you'll receive Olam Haba. It doesn't say that. It only says, so that you should be blessed, and you'll have crops, and you'll have rain, and cattle, and good things. Why does the Torah only talk about reward in this worldly matters and never mentions the next one? The sages in the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Oral Law, the Mishnah, the Gemara, they talk about Olam Haba always, that the entire purpose of our life in this world is to prepare for Olam Haba. But the Torah itself talks about rain and cattle. So the Ramban says, you want to know why that is? Because rain and cattle don't make sense. There is no logical reason in the world that a person would think that if I wear tefillin and keep Shabbos and keep kosher, I should have rain and cattle. Why? What is the connection? So the Torah says, I'm going to give that to you and watch it happen. Watch me manipulate the world for the sake of the righteous, that they will receive their blessings, and for the wicked who will receive their punishments within the nature of the world. Reward in Olam Haba for eternity. How do you know that that's going to happen? That's the most logical thing in the world, says the Ramban, that a neshama, a soul that was originally up in Shemaim with Hashem, that was sent down here to occupy our bodies and give us life, where else do you think it's going to go after our 120 years in this world? Of course it's going back to Shemaim to receive its eternal reward. That's not what we call a chiddush. That's not something new or novel that you wouldn't have known. The Torah needs to tell you you're going to have rain. That doesn't make any sense. But to tell you that the neshama, the soul, will receive its eternal reward, of course, that's where the neshama is going to go. That's where it came from. That's where it's going back. That the Torah is silent about. But the reward in this world, that is new. Going back to our pasuk, says the Ramban, that midah is Kel Shaddai. That's the midah of, I dominate the mazel, which might have dictated that you don't get rain. I'll make sure you get the rain. But you know what you're about to see, Hashem says to Moshe. You know what you're about to see? Ani Hashem. You're no longer just going to see the midah that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov saw, which was things worked out for them. They won wars. They became wealthy. We're not going to get a change in nature. Now we're going to get the 10 plagues. Now we're going to get the splitting of the sea. Sit back, says Hashem to Moshe, because you're about to see my presence in the world revealed in a way that has never been revealed before and rarely after, which is why we still celebrate Pesach Ad Hayom Hazeh until today, and we constantly go through all of those miracles because that's a reflection of Hashem in the world that's not concealed managing things. It's open and revealed, a total change of the nature of the world. Let's move on. All of that, that's Rashi and the Ramban's two approaches as to what Hashem opens up this conversation with by saying, the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov only experienced me in one way. Like Rashi promises by not being able to keep them, and according to the Ramban, within the nature of the world, but now you're going to see me in a new way. I'm going to fulfill my promise, and I'm going to reveal myself. Continues Hashem in his opening speech here, Pasuk Dal, V'gam ha'kimos yes b'risitam, to the Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I'm going to upkeep my promise that I made to them to give them this land. V'gam ani shamati es nakaspin, and I've heard the cries. I told Avram that it was going to be rough on his children, but I've heard their cries, and I've seen the way that the Egyptians are holding them into bondage. V'ezkor es b'risi, I will remember the covenant that I made with
Avram Lachain, therefore, Emor Livnei Yisrael, Ani Hashem, go tell the Jewish people this message of Ani Hashem. And here we get the first of the languages, the first couple, Vahotzesi Yaschem, I'm going to take them out of the burden of Mitzrayim, Vihitzalti Yaschem Yevodosam, I'm going to save them from the work, Vigaalti Yaschem, I'm going to redeem them, Vilakachti Yaschem Lilam, I'm going to take them to me as a nation. These are the four languages, Vahotzesi, I'm going to take them out. The commentators all mention, like, what's the difference between the languages? In the most simple reading, we'll just say it as, I'll take them out of the servitude, they won't be working hard. V'hitzalti eschem, I'll save you, that you won't even be under their jurisdiction at all. V'ga'alti eschem, I'm going to take you out of the land. V'lakachti, and I'll make you mine. So those are the four progressions of redemption, where I'm not being overly worked, I'm not even in their land, I'm out of their land, and then I'm positively now Hashem's people instead of the Egyptians' people. You will be for me a nation, and you will know that I am Hashem Elokechem, I'm Motzi Eschem Mitachal, I took you out of Mitzrayim. And then there's a fifth language. Some say this is the fifth cup of Eliyahu. The fifth language is Vehevesi Eschem Elokechem, I'm going to bring you to the land. So that not only will I take you out of bondage, not only will I make you free, not only will I redeem you, not only will I make you mine, then I'm going to bring you to the land that I had promised to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. You will receive it as an inheritance. Ani Hashem, that's the end of his speech. So in essence, we could summarize this first speech to Moshe of, now you're going to see something special. You're going to see in a way that no one has ever seen before, and I'm going to take these people out, I'm going to redeem them, I'm going to make you mine, you're going to become my nation, and I'm going to bring you to the land of Eretz Yisrael. What does Moshe do with this message? Vayidaber Moshe Kenel B'nei Yisrael. He does exactly what he was told. He goes back to the people and he says, I know this is the second time I'm telling you this because I told you this last week's parsha that Hashem was going to redeem you and then it worked out really poorly for you. I'm coming back to say, Ani Hashem, listen to this new message that Hashem gave me. The message of the revelation in a new way. The message of the promises being fulfilled. The messages of the four language, a fifth language. It's going to be great. And the response of the people, Velo Shamu'u El Moshe, they do not hear, they cannot listen to Moshe, Mikotze Ruach Umeavuda Kasha, from shortness of breath, and from the cruel bondage, the service that they are. Sir Rashi explains, shortness of breath is like when you're overworked, when you're panting, you can't even think straight. Rashi says, explains, here Moshe is coming with this unbelievable message of redemption. And the people are so overworked, they're so exhausted, they simply can't respond to the message. No matter what that message is, and this is literally one of the most important messages that we take out of this always, whenever we read this parsha, that sometimes we get so broken in whatever we're dealing with, so engaged and invested and short of breath, that someone might be conveying to us a message of redemption, we can't hear it. Moshe himself is saying this wonderful message from Hashem, and the people cannot hear the message from their work, from their kotzer ruach, and it's standing right in front of us. So, you know, this is already an old message that just gets worse and worse every year, but the nature of our new technology and our phones and the fact that we are literally bombarded with information 24/7, it's sometimes hard to be able to hear the bigger messages that are going on around us because we're short on breath, so to speak, just constantly bombarded with information in every way. This is the first message that Hashem delivers to Moshe in our parsha. Moshe delivers it to the people, and they can't hear it. They literally do not listen and cannot listen to him because of their difficulty. End of the first paragraph. You see the little pay here. If you had a chumash, in a chumash itself, there'd be a blank space following this. Now what? So Moshe delivers the message. He tells the people it's going to be great. It's going to turn around. Everything is going to be amazing. And they say, go home, Moshe. We don't want to hear it. So Hashem speaks to Moshe again. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe alimor. Here we have a second time that now Hashem is speaking to Moshe in the beginning of the parasha. Before we even get to the second speech, one interesting note, this pasuk of Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe alimor, most of the times would go unnoticed because we're so familiar with that phrase. Yeah, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe alimor. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, that phrase actually appears over 70 times in the Chumash. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe alimor. But this is actually the first. This is the first time that we have that phrase of what does it mean, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor. It should just say Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe. What's that extra phrase, Lemor? So just an interesting point, the Ramban comments
he says it's often mistranslated. How is it mistranslated? As if it means that Hashem spoke to Moshe, and then the Lemor saying is giving Moshe permission to say it over to the Jewish people. That it distinguishes between a prophecy that's given to only to Moshe for his sake, but when you add the word Lemor, then it's, I'm saying this to you so that you should say it to someone else. The Ramban says it's not true. Can't be that the additional word of Lemor is giving him permission to say it to someone else. And he brings numerous examples throughout Chumash where you see that double language of Vayidaber Lemor, and it's not to give permission to speak because no one's supposed to say anything to anyone. For example, when Lavan chases Yaakov, when Yaakov leaves his uncle Lavan's house to go back to the land of Israel with his four wives and 11 children, so Lavan pursues him and he catches up to him and he says, I was going to do you harm, but Hashem appeared to me last night saying, don't touch Yaakov. And Lavan uses that language of Emesh Amarli Hashem Lemor. Hashem appeared to me saying. And it wasn't to give him permission to say something to Yaakov. It was, as the Ramban understands, the double language is actually a language of total clarity. Like, for example, we find many times in the Chumash a double language. Im shamoa tishmu'u, ane ta'anef. You will certainly answer. Tsa'ok yitzak. If you will surely cry out. The double language in Hebrew is a surely with total clarity. And here it's a language of only Moshe gets that. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. The level of prophecy of a Moshe was, you're getting this message, and it's not in a dream, it's not a riddle, it is with total clarity. Here is the message, whether it's for him personally or to deliver, it's an expression of clarity. And the Ramban uses, so too when we find that elsewhere, like for the other example that he gives is that the Jewish people complain to Moshe, one of the many times they complain, why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? So it says they appeared to Moshe, Lemor, meaning they complained to him, and it wasn't like a veiled complaint. It wasn't like they were beating around the bush. They came and they said, Moshe, why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? It's terrible, we want to go back. It's with total clarity of communication, not leaving any doubt as to what was said or what they meant. That's that double language of Vayidaber Lemor. Hashem spoke to Moshe with total clarity. This is what he said. And we find that elsewhere in the Chumash when things are communicated with total clarity. As we all know, sometimes communications are less clear. Is that what they meant? Did they mean to say this? This is without any doubt. Anyway, what's the second communication that Hashem gives Moshe in our parasha? Bo daber el Paro melech Mitzrayim. Go speak to Paro, king of Mitzrayim. Mishalach es b'nei Yisrael me'artzo. Okay, so this is what happens next. Hashem spoke to Moshe and said, now you're going to see. Moshe tells the people, now you're going to see. They say, go away, Moshe. So what's Moshe supposed to do now? Hashem comes back to Moshe and says, I'll tell you what to do now. Go back to Paro. Yes, the first time you did so, it didn't work out very well. Paro took away the straw, made their lives miserable. Now I want you to go back to Paro, and he's going to send the Jewish people out from his land. What's Moshe's response to this? A one-line communication that Hashem gives him? Vayidaber Moshe lefnei Hashem lemor. Hashem, Moshe now speaks before Hashem with that total clarity, and he says, Hein b'nei Yisrael lo shamu'u elai. Listen, I just went to the Jewish people with this message, and they didn't listen. Ve'eich yishme'eini Paro. How can I expect Paro to listen? The people themselves, who are enslaved, who want to hear the message, who are yearning for redemption, they didn't listen to me. How is Paro, who has everything to lose with this message, how is he possibly going to hear this? Va'ani aral sifasayim. And then he adds, and I am a man with a broken or sealed lips. I'm an aral sifasayim. I don't speak well. I have a speech impediment. So how can I present this? So in the big picture, in essence, Moshe basically just says, this isn't going to work, Hashem. I can't. It didn't work with the Jewish people. It's not going to work with Paro. In the details of Moshe's response, we have to understand, is he making one argument here or two arguments? What is he adding when he says, and I have a speech impediment, I have sealed lips? Is that somehow independent? It's a second argument. A, the people didn't listen to me. Why would Paro listen to me? Or is it part of the reason? So the Ramban actually presents two approaches to understanding what Moshe is saying here, and they reflect two very different understandings of this dialogue. Very interesting, I found. On the first half, the Ramban explains as follows. Moshe was saying it as, you can't send me to Paro. you can't send me to power because it's not going to work. How do I know it's not going to work? Because look, it didn't even work when I went to speak to the Jewish people. And he says it in a way of a complaint. His language is... One second, let me just mute everybody. There we go. He says... You haven't given me the ability to have my words heard. Lo asita devarai shiyu nishma'im lahem. I came with to the Jewish people with your message, and you didn't create a circumstance in which it can be heard. And since you didn't create a circumstance in which it could be heard to the people, ech yishma'eni paro. How will you create a circumstance that paro will even hear? A standalone argument. And then he adds a second argument of ve'od, and furthermore, it's not appropriate for me to speak to Paro. I have a lip, my lips are sealed. I have a speech impediment. It's not honorable. It's not honorable for him, and it's unsuitable for me that I should go and speak before him with this. I can't go. So in essence, Moshe basically says, yeah, you want me to go speak to Paro? It's not going to work. It didn't work for the people. You didn't create it in a way that it's going to work. It's not going to work for Paro, and it's not appropriate for me to speak to Paro. That's approach number one. Second approach, the Ramban suggests, is what Moshe meant was a little bit different, and that the idea of his lip impediment is why he says it didn't work to the Jewish people. Why did it not work when I spoke to the Jewish people? Why did they say, go away, we can't hear, we're so tired? He said, because lo yochin ledabir alibam dvarim tovim, I don't have the ability to speak to their hearts. When somebody is so tired, somebody is so broken, they're so out of breath, the person who's speaking to them needs to have the ability to talk to their hearts. Dvarim nichumim, words of comfort. I can't do that. I don't have those words. So if I wasn't able to speak to these broken people in a way because of my impediment, in a way that they can hear, how much more so will I be ineffective trying to convince the ruler who's enslaving these people that he should let them go? I can't do this. Now, the Ramban points out something fascinating. This is the second speech that Moshe is supposed to give to Paro. He already gave one and it failed. But on that speech, Moshe did not say any of these arguments. He said, Hashem said to him, go to Paro. He went to Paro. Paro rejected. He didn't say, I can't. He didn't say Paro's not going to listen. He didn't say, I have a speech impediment. Only now he's saying it on the second speech. Why is he only saying it now? So the Ramban says a careful reading nets a very interesting thing. The first time he was sent to Paro, he was sent together with Aharon and with the Zakenim, with the elders. And Moshe assumed, obviously, the first time we're going to go to Paro, I'm not going to be the one to do this speaking. I have a speech impediment. And he goes and he has Aharon and the Zakenim. This time, Hashem says to him, Bo daber el Paro, Pasuk Yud Aleph here. Hashem says to Moshe, Moshe alone, you're going to go speak now to Paro. And now Moshe says, me alone, I'm going to speak? I can't. It's not appropriate. I have the speech impediment. That's the end of the second speech. There's another payers in the Torah. There's another break. There's another space where Hashem says to him to do something. And Moshe basically says, I can't. It's not going to work. The third speech, which is also just a one pasuk speech, the third speech that Hashem says now is not just to Moshe alone, but to Moshe and Aharon. Rashi notes this is, of course, a reflection of Moshe's rejection of the demand of him in the previous pasuk, in which he said, "I can't. It didn't work for the people. It's not going to work for Paro. I have an impediment." So Hashem now speaks to Moshe and to Aharon.
And he commands them regarding Bnei Yisrael, the Jewish people, and Paro Melech Mitzrayim. And he commands Moshe and Aaron regarding the Jewish people and regarding Paro to take them out of Mitzrayim.
Let's conclude with one question. There's one phrase here that doesn't seem to make sense in this last communication. Hashem now speaks to Moshe and Aharon. As Rashi noted, he's now adding Aharon into the equation. He's going to be there with you every time because you don't want to do it on your own. Okay, I'll bring Aharon in.
It should have simply said, and he commanded them, Vayitzavim, only in regards to Paro. He commanded them to go to Paro and say, we're leaving. What does it mean that he commanded them, El Bnei Yisrael, in regards to the Jewish people? What are Moshe and Aharon being told now about the Jewish people? There's nothing to be told about the Jewish people. The only thing they're supposed to do now is go to Paro and say it's time to leave. Rashi here adds one beautiful phrase. We'll take a look at it inside. I'll show you. Rashi here says, what does it mean? Here he says, because Moshe said, I have Aral Sfasim, I have these sealed lips. Hashem said, okay, you'll have Aaron with you. Vayitzaveim el b'nei Yisrael. What does he mean in regards to the Jewish people? To deal with them in a gentle manner and be patient with them. The Medrash says, yes, he gave him a special command at this moment, as they're about to go in the second time to Paro. There was a special command to Moshe and to Aaron about the Jewish people. What about the Jewish people that they commanded? They're about to go into Paro. They're commanded, you have to deal with the Jewish people benachas, in a gentle manner, uvisavlonos, and with patience. Because when you have to deal with, as now they're being given this, filisbolo tamrashi, literally with tolerance and patience. Now you're my leaders. Now you've seen the kotzer ruach, the shortness of breath, the avodah kasha. They don't listen to you. They're complaining. You're going to get a special command as you now take on this leadership, the two of you, and you're about to go into Paro, and we're now going to kick this redemption process in earnest. It's now going to start, but you're given a special command. As leaders of the Jewish people, you have to have patience, and you have to treat them with nachas and with savlanus. It's the way it goes, with a gentle manner and with patience. Why do you need to be told this? Because it's not going to be easy, Moshe Aharon says. It's not going to be easy. But that's what the Jewish leadership is required to do, savlonus, with patience and in a gentle manner. And with this, we begin now the second journey into Paro, which of course will begin the rest of the Makos, the plagues. We'll get to a number of them in this week's Parsha already. Culminating in all of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, I leave you with those thoughts as we begin the parsha, the three communications that Moshe has given from Hashem, and what to learn from them. And Mirtz Hashem will continue working along, and I will see you all next week.